So we have a new feature. I have to go in and add a new view and a new controller and all that. Do I just do, you know, file new class, or do you have automation tools where I say add new view, or how does that work?
I'll see you talk about four of those.
Okay, before I dive into automation, this is one of the biggest hurdles we ran into. Is, do you see the number of contracts we have? It was slowing us down. So
yeah. Development, build, performance, what do you mean by slowing you down?
Development.
Okay.
Yeah, under peer development, because it spent a lot of time, and it was actually a frustration for some of our project managers, quite honestly. And there's nothing wrong, so.
Yeah, but frankly, they're not doing their job if they're not frustrated about something.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. So, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, sitting around tables talking during the negotiation, and they were like, well, why, you know, there's no typing on the keyboard. So it was something that we addressed through automation, and that's where the pattern really hits its stride. It's one thing to look at this and, you know, realize, you know, hear me say we're getting all this, you know, massive velocity out of it. When you look at any of our projects, and, you know, Steve will explain why in a minute, you know, we call it a confetti maker, because for every view, there's, you know, the XAML, there's the backend file, there's the contract. There's the interface to the contract. There's the property bags. So we figure right now there's about 9 files, you know,
per view.
Per view. Well, it's roughly the same for the contract and, you know, the controller and the model. So when you start going in, you've got your contracts, and we right-click through automation, you know, a lot of files all over the place.
So basically what we decided to do was, we were repeating the same code constantly, and our bug count was climbing dramatically. The reason for that was, what, everybody types in the same thing and get exactly the same code, right? No. So we are getting multiple implementations. So first thing we did is we went down to the standard branch. Okay, let's put snippets in.
Okay.
We got the snippets working. Everyone was thrilled to death with that. We saw a scale of performance increase then. Then we went to templates. Obviously, that's the next logical step. And then what we were realizing, even with snippets and templates, you're having a lot of problems around disposal. Because we're using eventing heavily, and because we're using any type of object use identify property changing, everything is stitched together tightly. It's bound tight. So when you're disposing, we're disposing a hierarchy of multi-file, multi-class system. And the odds of something not getting a reference being left attached to something and holding the whole thing up is high. So the snippets was giving us the velocity we were looking for, but we literally were hitting situations where we would have as many as a couple hundred references open because something didn't get quite destroyed and something else was holding it because of this nice hierarchical pattern. Mm-hmm. So we went to automation. So.
And then it occurred to us, hey, we've got these cool contracts. Maybe we can do something with that.
So basically, we do everything off the interface. That's the only thing we plumb. Okay.
So you write your interface by hand first.
Yep.
Okay.
So basically,
well, we've even got templates for those.
Okay.
Yeah. So we give you a base template that gives you some of the things you need to have, and your interface already busted up. And then what we do is, all we do is this. When you're looking at a contract, all we look at the contract from two perspectives: the publisher and the subscriber. And what happens is, from the publisher's perspective, we'll auto-build properties. And what I mean by auto-building of properties, we'll drop the property in. We'll implement the iNotify handler for both change and changing. We'll interrogate the type of property it is, determine if it's an object, if it's value. We'll build out the destructor logic for it. And if it supports dispose, we'll call dispose free automatically.
Okay,
so we do that for properties. For events, we'll do the same thing. One important thing is, we don't implement events off the straight keyword. We actually go ahead and do the add remove pattern.
Okay.
So we guarantee if we kill the private, all the subscriptions will die automatically. So we'll do the same thing here. We'll build that out. And then the same thing, we'll also gen the method for you. Let's leave it empty. So you will stub them out for you. And then we'll implement a set of disposal helpers.
So just to be clear, what he's talking about is that, you know, we right-click, you create the template, you the, controller template, the model template, the view template.
So you right-click on an interface and
It gives you three types of contracts to create. You create it, you fill it out, and then we feed it to the automation. And then what he's talking about is it will generate all of these things on the target class.
So they partial classes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So the we have a dot contract that all the contract items go into for you automatically. So we separate it out from the code you're working on automatically.
So is it a separate project or folder?
It's a separate file.
Separate file.
So it doesn't come up with a nice neat a collection, because obviously otherwise you have to use dot designer for that. You want to leave designer alone. But the contract file is the partial class that implements these items. Then on the subscriber side, we implement, we'll build out the events for you automatically, the event handlers. So we'll methods, and we'll generate the subscribing methods and bolt them in for you automatically. So the goal is, this is where our velocity took off.
Okay.
So as we started destroying things, they were actually closing properly. We were releasing RAM, things were working well, and the main issue is with WPF, there is no iDisposable support for WPF. So we built out a reference example. It was not included in our .9 release. It's something we'll be putting in our 1.0 release of the MVC WPF project itself. But these disposable helpers are basically based off the iDisposable pattern.
So what always happens when I do code generation at some level is someone renegotiates the contract and have to throw the baby out with the bathwater and start over. Did you guys deal with that at all, or have you found a solution to that problem?
Well, actually, what we're doing today is we just go straight into the contract class and we just modify it by hand for today. In the future, and I don't know if this won't make it in 1.0, but it'll make it in a later rev, we'll actually real-time update the code for you. And that's coming. That's a separate project that'll feed into.
So update the existing
right. So if you
generated partial class.
If you go in and you manually alter the contract, because in the feature, you know, we've come to Sprint 3 and we've got, hey, new feature.
Agile happens.
Exactly. Right now, it's you got to do it, then you got to implement the pieces of part yourself. But there's snippets there to help with that for when you get to it. What Steve's talking about is that in the future release, we'll be able to take that and then do an automatic refactor. So everywhere that's touched, it'll get adjusted.
So the old classic, when I update an interface, you get a little underline, you select it and say, update, you'll do the same type of thing to your contracts. It'll go through, it'll auto-wire, it'll drop. And that's another open source project we'll be releasing, but it's not in the current scope of what we have today.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of manual work still, it's a lot better than where we were at, you know, a year ago. The other important thing is, one of the biggest frustrations I have with any type of automated solution is there's no control over it. If I'm a developer, I'm building one of these things out, I can't do anything with it, I'm stuck with their templates, this doesn't meet my needs. We spent an exorbitant amount of time in automation. Our automation framework underneath the hood, basically there's a directory under MVC for WPF, there's a templates directory. That's where we store all of our templates. Well, you can actually update the code templates to use your own templates, and it'll fire through the T4, and we use T4 to power all of our contract construction and those parts and pieces. And all that's in the source, I mean, our entire automation library is part of the source control, so you can get in there, you can see everything, how we did it, you know, what we did good, what we really screwed up on, those type of things. And what's important about it is I want to make sure that whoever uses this can really customize it to meet their needs.
Yeah.
So if you understand how to update a template, you pretty much can do a lot of this is all built for you. Just how you want to assemble it, how you want to cook it. And then you can override it to do whatever you want.
Okay.
We have as much of that as possible inside the T4. So that everyone could then really get in there, change it to whatever they want, how they want to do it. So really it's completely customizable. As we get to the version 1.0 release, we'll have more discussions and white papers on how to really touch the automation. So you can make it really custom for your solution, your needs.
So the first job of an architect, I feel, is to bring critical thought to a project. Do I use this? Do I not use this? And the answer to every question is it depends.
Right.
Architects, right? So when would I not use this? we've talked about some of the great successes you've had, but there's not every tool works in every scenario. So when would I choose not to use this, you think?
Well, there's always the standard one you give with almost any type of implemented pattern when you have very few number of people. You're one person.
Developers or users?
Developers,
yeah. I mean, it really, that's where it falls down the most, in all honesty. I mean, the pattern has, even if you're, you know, by yourself doing the work, you could argue that the pattern has a lot of maintainability going down the road. But then you're having contract negotiation with yourself.
Yeah.
So
you have to go into Rain Man mode.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, so that's probably, at least the current feeling, is that it falls down the hardest in that situation. The other one has been if you have requirements out of the view, adapting the contracts to route commands, although we've extended it recently to do that. So
the other thing is if you need a fully cooked product, if you need a true framework, mm-hmm. this is not where you want to start. If you don't have time to actually do a full architecture on your product, probably not the best place to start unless you're building a very simple application.
Okay.
We like I said, we don't tell you how to implement the controller-to-controller construction. We provide example apps to show you how to do it, mm-hmm. but you can use factory patterns or your Unity framework.
You have the flexibility to choose, right?
But that was important to us. I mean, in all honesty, when we were creating that was one of the things that we were solving for when we created this, mm-hmm. Is that of the pattern, the first thing you do is when we had the problem is we went out and looked and said, well, is there anything out there that I can leverage? Started doing this.
Yeah.
And while there were pieces and parts in one framework or another, they either didn't have all of it or there was an edge case where it became difficult to do something. You have to design around it. And so that's actually one of the chief drivers behind why this is the way it is that the flexibility, we needed it. Because as architects, that's one of the things you're doing the most is you're putting the blocks together to solve the situation at hand. And if somebody's giving you a framework, they don't have insight into what the problems are. Mm-hmm. So
the other thing that's interesting is when we were building out the documentation for this, we had Bill Simp helping us go through this at the very beginning of the documentation cycle. Mm-hmm. So it's still very rough, still a lot rough around the edges. And I was still building a lot of the automation out at the time. Bill came over to my cube and said, okay, I reviewed this pattern. Is that it?
Where's the rest?
Yeah.
I remember that conversation.
Yeah. And that was the whole point. Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
So for some reason, if it's not huge and monstrosities, people don't think it's powerful. Well, actually, the simpler the architecture, we typically find the more powerful it is.
Right. So you guys have chosen to open source this, which I think is fantastic. I really believe in companies contributing back to open source. We get so much from it. I really encourage everyone to contribute back either to a project or, in your case, create a project. So you've posted this on CodePlex, but where do I actually go to get this? You've mentioned demos and sample code and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where do I go?
You go, the actual landing page for the project is actually mvc4wpf.com.
So mvc4wpf.com, mm-hmm. that gets me everything I need. The number 4.
Yeah.
And right here, once I'm done editing. Yeah. And that'll get me to... The bits, I can download the source, the tools.
Yeah. And that we link out to the actual CodePlex site.
Right.
But what we generally have up on the actual site itself is that's where our videos are at, and that's where then we link out for the actual code. We do link back to CodePlex.
Yeah.
There's no sense of reinventing the wheel doing it twice.
Right, yeah.
But who all the contributors are. So you actually list all the contributors.
Papers,
we make sure that you can get to us.
Cool.
Everybody who ever touched it. Not just us.
Yeah.
So why did you open source it?
Because
this is a you're a consulting firm. Mm-hmm. You have competitors. Mm-hmm. This when you can cut 30% off the cost of a project because you have to win your work. Mm-hmm. That's a competitive advantage, I would think.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that because certain people in the company thought we were nuts for wanting to go down the path of open source. But
did they call you dirty hippies?
No.
Okay.
But they were thinking about it. But what was great is our management sees the benefit of it. for them, they see both sides. They see the value, like, okay, if we want to implement this, maybe we want to use the company that actually designed and built it. But the other part is they see just the general benefit out there. And the thing is, you still have to use it. It's not like it's just going to plug in and go.
Yeah.
You still have to do some design work, and we're not worried about our competition. There's not a lot of WPF development firms out there right now. And by the time it becomes, it gets to the point where there are a lot of WPF development firms, we'll be on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, for us, we want to be on the front, not the back end of the technology, you know, the back edge of the technology curve. So we work for a very visionary guy. Mm-hmm. He's very forward thinking. He believes in the open source movement very heavily. Yeah, our automation stuff that we're headed towards, it's gonna lower everyone's margin across the board as far as delivery time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty powerful when you say, you know, we've built this tool, it's very valuable, and we're going to put it out in open source so that your customers, when you're pitching it, can even download it and look at it themselves, right? This isn't
exactly
some internal framework that you hear about that you never see. Mm-hmm. It's something that they can download, they can see all this material on it, and know that you're bringing to bear some pretty powerful stuff.
Not only that, though, but if our competitors are using the same framework and the same bid that we are, it's going to help us. We're going to have a little bit more weight at the table.
Yeah.
Than our competitors.
Right. And you know, there's a lot more behind it. You know, one of the other things that we'll be putting along with the automation project is we're putting out a template, you know, based around this, a TFS template. Sorry.
Okay.
Because you know, implied around a lot of this and a lot of velocity is a lot of ALM. Mm-hmm. You know, that goes along with this that we've proved out over the, you know, last 2 years. And so we'll be putting up our best practices on that and leveraging the framework, other TFS templates also.
Oh, cool. Very good. I look forward to that. And then you're also discussing possibly doing some podcasts around this to help people kind of learn to adopt it and use it.
Absolutely.
That'll be on the website as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for your time, Steve.
Thank you very much.
John.
Thank you.
And thanks for letting me come in and talk to you guys today about this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.